We'll pledge to the flag. Pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Order. March. March. March.
Thank you very much. And I ask all of you to share with me the emotion of today. It's been a long day of remembrance and sadness, but love for our country. With that, we'll go with awards and presentations.
We've got several awards and recognitions this week, beginning with Takesha Burrell, our risk manager, management administrator. Takesha does receive her Master's of Science in Human Resource Management from Florida International University. Finance and Administration Department. He recently received his MBA from the University of Central Florida. Danny Kelly. Lineman 2, and we're recognizing him for 5 years of service with KUA. It's Samantha, but I call her Sandy. Samantha Stoltz. Within our IT department, she's being recognized for 10 years of service. Okay. September 2019, Employee of the Month, William Wise. William's been with KUA for 14 years, right? You, began as a part-time switch operator in July of 2001 through May of 2008. Then you were rehired in August of 2012 as a part-time receptionist, and last year promoted full-time to a customer service representative. Here's a few things your fellow employees describe you as: always willing to assist and meet the needs of our customers, in particular our elderly customers. You treat them with remarkable patience and respect. You are dependable and super efficient. These characteristics represent all that our company desires from our employees, and I agree 110%. And I'd like to recognize you and introduce you as our Employee of the Month. Also like to introduce you to our board, beginning with our chair, Jeannie Van Meter.
William, we have this. Thank you for your service.
Our vice chair is
full.
She's up there.
The TV. Congratulations.
Vice. Director, Secretary Afolodina.
You said check to enjoy.
Thank you.
Assistant Secretary Director Manny Ortega.
Thank you, sir. Yes, sir. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Corey Hemphill.
Congratulations, and a day off with pay.
And Mayor Jose Alvarez.
How are you? Nice to meet you. Congratulations. There's some Osceola Arts tickets.
Thank you.
Enjoy.
Thank you.
Go to D, hear the audience. Do we have anyone in the audience who would want to speak to us today? Not so. We'll go to the consent agenda. Need a motion?
Motion to accept.
My second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, like sign. Motion passes. Public hearing, there's none. And we'll wait for everybody to exit before John comes up. Maybe they're leaving because they know you're coming up. I'm not too sure. Chris, are you going to?
Sure. As is our tradition, we ask recipient organizations who receive sponsorship dollars from KUA to come in and share how those contributions have successfully impacted their operations over the past year. Today, we are pleased to have John Newstreet, President and CEO of the Kissimmee Osceola County Chamber of Commerce, as well as their event director, Belinda, here. Chamber is not only Central Florida's largest Chamber of Commerce, but they're also the leading event organizers for the entire county, and their membership is made up primarily of KUA commercial customers. And with that, John Newstreet.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Board, for having me today and for your tremendous support. Our very first slide, is there a clicker? Chris, are you able to click forward? Thank you. So our very first slide will express our gratitude for your partnership and your support. Many of your clients are our members, and so it's really a twofer anytime we get together and help our community. And so thank you first and foremost for again, your partnership and support. We can't do it without you, and certainly we're better off because we do it with you. So thank you. And Chair, I'm glad they all left. I was getting intimidated. So I know I'm amongst friends, but that's a big crowd.
I just don't believe that from you. I've seen you up there with snakes and stuff. So.
That's yeah, right. That's me. So just a few numbers on the event in particular that we partnered on. Our year starts off with the Three Kings Day here in Osceola. Last year was the second year we've hosted it at Old Town USA. They are a great partner for two reasons. It really works for space and location. But more importantly, we have gotten a lot more muscle into our advertising because of their reach in the region, attracting people into their locale that complements our already big advertising budget. And because of that partnership and just because of the nature of the event, we've seen it grow in attendance to over 8,000, we estimated last year. For those board members who may not be familiar with this event, it's entirely free for attendees. And so an attendee that comes can get a free Gatorade. Over 2,500 of those were consumed. Over 1,000 hot dogs were cooked on your KUA grill and handed out for free. And so you got a free hot dog. And over 1,500 toys were donated, and that's only because we ran out of time. We then took the excess toys that were donated by partners and found other partners in the community to give a toy for a child who was maybe not as fortunate during the holiday season. And so this is geared towards the Hispanic community as a celebration of their Three Kings Day. And so over 1,500 kids that day walked away with a free toy. And we are continuing to try to improve all of our events, especially this one since it's grown, to make sure we can hand out more toys day of and continue to have that impact in our community. So a little non-traditional in how a chamber might do an event in the community. This one's strictly to give back, but it's probably one of our most favorite events because of that. So thank you for your partnership there. The annual meetings hosted later that month or early February. This is a nice celebration out at Disney's Contemporary Resort. We had 375 in attendance. That does max out the capacity in the room, and so we're looking at either moving it or finding some way to accommodate the wonderful crowd that we host. It's a nice event. Over 63 companies were represented to equal those almost 400 attendees. We gave 5 awards out last year, including to a Hall of Fame recipient, Jim Welsh. And so the lower right-hand picture shows some very attractive people that stood with Jim. So give me more money. I was being, no, I'm kidding. So Hall of Fame recipient Jim Welsh was honored into our Hall of Fame, which is quite prestigious. And, of course, our annual gavel exchange, we recognize the transition of power from one chairman to the next. And so we thank you for that support. It was a very nice event and continues to grow as well. Our Osceola Legislative Drive-Up, this is OLE, which is a partnership from the county, the school board, and the two cities. We have a day on the Hill where we address the common priorities of the community, and so we had 15 legislator briefings. We sit in the majority leader's office in their conference room, and so it's great access during session to have those legislators come talk to us. And again, you as a sponsor have helped make sure that we're able to push those common priorities. Bridge did receive funding, I think you all know, in the legislature, but was vetoed by the governor. The Safe Schools and Mental Health was successful in making sure after post Marjorie Stoneman Douglas that we have a presence and for our students to learn and be safe. A welding program has made great progress in association with City of St. Cloud with all the construction we see. And so we made great progress. This event is likely to change this year. We're looking at maybe going in committee weeks. That will free up a lot more legislators who get pulled onto the floor for bill hearings and things, and also to accommodate some of our business community to join us. It's heavily geared towards working with our elected officials, and we do want to expand our presence and our issues that we are advocating for in Tallahassee. So so that's this year, and it will change, I think, in the near future. Our Osceola update, another event that has changed. We took our legislative update, which was an update from our state legislative delegation about what happened in Tallahassee. We combine that with our Economic Development Summit, which talks about what's happening here. Very common interests there. So we call it now the Osceola Update, where the legislators give a cut of what happened in Tallahassee, and we give a look at the economic landscape here in the community. So we had 250 in attendance with 3 prominent speakers on the dais, and again, we will probably follow that model in the year ahead and continue to grow that event as well. Our Spirit of Hospitality is geared towards our tourism industry. It's a partnership with Experience Kissimmee where we recognize folks both frontline and management in the hospitality world. That's coming up next Friday. Next Friday. Thank you, Belinda. And so we recognize awards on a monthly basis. I just presented an award today to the program director at Osceola High School, who runs a hospitality program for students to learn more about the impact and the opportunities in the tourism sector. And so it's instances like that where the 45,000 jobs in Osceola that are tied to hospitality can be sustained and grow. And, of course, the other thing I always mention when I hand out these plaques and participate is the impact of tourism here is not only 45,000 jobs, but to the residents of Osceola County, it's $900 in savings on your pocketbook each year. So we need that, and we need more of that. And so recognizing the All-Stars who are smiling and bringing these visitors in, bringing them back to support them and to grow that industry is important to all of us. So our Spirit is a nice little meal to recognize that. The traditionally biggest event, it's only surpassed by Three Kings now, but Viva is a Latin festival in October. We do it in association with the City of Kissimmee at the Lakefront Park. You have a tremendous presence there in the Kids Zone, which is very popular. Last year, we had about 3,000 in attendance and 65 vendors. We learned a lot of lessons. We were moved from one lawn in the park to another lawn, which gave us some logistical challenges. And so based upon that, we're back in the old location. We have hired a new promoter to work with us who specializes in doing these things. I'm not into trying to get just blue M&Ms for our entertainers. So this person does that. They do it very well. They will make this event far more successful, both in the entertainment lineup, which is the big draw, but also in how we advertise it regionally to bring people in. And so a whole new plan to get Viva essentially back on track and to have it reach its full potential. Our downtown update is hosted by our Downtown Kissimmee Area Council. So That's geared specifically towards the businesses who are interacting. These are strictly, I'm sure, your clients in particular. So we had 41 companies come to that, 125 in attendance, and the presentations were given by governmental partners about what's right around the corner, what's happening. And then finally, the Golf Classic we hosted last year at Champions Gate. We will move it to a new course partner this year. We're looking at a change on the luncheon to make that a little more inviting, so you don't necessarily have to play golf to come network and participate and support us. But last year we had 93 golfers, and that event, again, continues to grow as well. So that's the partnership we've had in the last year, and I'm trying to be respectful of time, so I'm talking fast and racing through it. Happy to answer any questions, but I'll leave you with what guides us all as an organization and in partnership with you. Our mission statement: we are champions for business and community. When you leave work, it doesn't stop our responsibility to still want to have a nice place to live and play. And so we want to champion that cause with you, both for business and community. We are a growing community, and so we want to be less reactive and more proactive in how we lead a regional prosperous economy with the opportunity ahead of us. And finally, our values of creating opportunity, embracing our heritage, which is very special here in Osceola County. And finally, as we continue to grow in a diverse environment, to build unity together. So thank you.
Thank you. It's done.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Go to old business.
Yes, Madam Chair. We've got two items under old business, but they are related to the same project. A couple years ago, we came to the board and talked to them about, to y'all about needing to, the necessity to upgrade one of the transmission facilities out of Kane Island that's co-owned with us and FMPA. We've made some progress on that, and to tell you a little bit more about where we're headed is Larry Mattern.
Thank you, Brian. Hello, everyone. Well, as Brian told you, we've been talking about this since 2017. It's been on your budgets, it's been on the radar that Duke Energy Florida is compelled to upgrade a section of the line that approaches our area because it will overload our line, I'll explain to you. And this will have, this is a two-part presentation, and there'll be two different recommendations in here, but we're going to run through it shortly here. The other thing, as we have talked about this, the important thing to know is any money we spend on this, even if it leaves our hand or not, it will be refunded us by Duke 100%. So that's a good thing. So I could probably sit down now, but
I went through the whole presentation until I saw that. Then I said, okay, that's...
Oh, you were in pins and needles. So I thought I'd let you know up front. That was a recommendation of our great staff here in our meeting that we should tell you that soon. So what's going to happen is actually in... It's not going to let me do it in this one because I'm hitting the wrong thing. If you can see in the skyline, this is actually the line that's going through the trees in the back that's going to be replaced. What happened is Duke bought Osprey Energy Center from Calpine, and most of their loads in the northern part of the state. So when they bought this, Calpine was a marketer. When they bought this and they're going to be pushing a load, we are in the I-4 corridor of transmission sitting at the top of that. So it goes right through us. So they were told by FRCC, you need to upgrade it. They had a study done, and a study says, yes, these lines are going to have to be upgraded, and you're affecting FMPA and KUA's jointly owned line. So it comes from there, and it comes to Kane Island. So that's the reason we're doing it, from the power there going past us. Now, here's Central Florida. This is just in that area, and the green lines there are, and even the red line, are transmission lines. And what's happening is because they're here and pushing power this way, the red line, we made our line particularly there red because it's going to be hot. It's going to be overloaded. But it's that's the area that we're going to upgrade that section there. They'll upgrade their own lines, but that's the part they have to do for us. And to tell you what we have there now and what's going to happen, I get to get this pointer some more, is on falling out of our substation, the red side, we have a line coming down right now, and it goes down and it goes through the plant in Intercession City. Their Intercession City plant. Right now on the red one, I need to go back, on the red one, excuse me, I needed water. We have that line on, and we also have our line that goes to Kissimmee. So because they're lighter lines, we can use the same structures. What's happening now, that we're getting heavier lines so we can have heavier load, The blue side of this is we're going to move new structures, leave those structures there for what goes up here to our Kissimmee load, and the blue line will be new structures and bring that line down to the substation in the intersection city of Duke Energy. So for the first portion here, we have that agreement that they'll pay 100% of what we do, and we're recommending that you would accept that. The staff of all three companies agree that this is the thing to do. So I leave it to your decision.
Are there any questions for Larry?
No.
Make a motion that we accept the recommendation.
Do you have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion passes.
Okay, and then to continue on, since you accepted that, I can do the second half. So now that you've accepted it, we would like to start the engineering services. Now, the projected cost of this project is going to be $6.4 million, about $6.5 million. Back in 17, we didn't know how much. We took an estimate, and prices were lower then. And again, all the costs will be reimbursed. So in 17, we put money aside. We put about $5.5 million. We figured that would be enough, but we thought we were going to do it then. So times went by, and we're a little under that. So in 21, anticipating that it could run over, and in our projected 21 budget, we put nearly another $4 million. Now that we know this closer to six, when we offer you the 21 budget, we'll probably adjust that number to where it fits. Now, why there's numbers here. You said they were paying for it. This is to book. When we do procurement, when we hire engineers and we do this, even though Duke is going to pay us immediately as we get the money, we have to book it to show that we have the money to do what we're doing. So
is this a reimbursement they're doing us?
They're actually, we may be in a case of reimbursement. In most cases, they'll be giving us money as we get
a progressive. They'll be paying us progressively.
Yes. So to get this moving, the first piece of money we need to spend, and Black and Veatch is who, they're our engineer of record, and they've done similar jobs like this all over our territory. So we've went to them. And the procurement engineering, this is similar to like substations they built, similar like lines they put up for us before, and similar like when we built the power plants, where they oversee the construction with our folks, but also they'll do the engineering and procurement for us. And the cost of that is a not to exceed number of 1.164202. And we recommend that you would, to start the project, that you would accept that we could contract with them. Any questions?
Any questions on that?
Now, just a quick question. I'm assuming that we have a written contract, an agreement with Duke, that the reimbursement is not just a gentleman agreement, if you will.
No, that in fact, the first section you just agreed here has all those details in it.
Okay.
Black and Veatch is a good company out of Kansas City.
Yes.
Make a motion to accept.
Second? I'll second it. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion passes. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
Okay, we go to new business. There's none. Then we go to staff reports.
Yes, Madam Chair. We've got Kevin Crawford, Vice President of Finance and Administration, that's going to provide us with a condensed financial report.
Madam Chair, Board, good afternoon.
You heard what he said, right?
Condensed.
It's so odd you say that. Our staff made the same comment in our meeting, so I'll try not to take offense to that. So, you know, no, thank you.
But we love you. We just like condensing.
Condense is good. Yes, ma'am. Thank you. I will stick to that. So, again, quarterly financial statements as of June 30, operating results for that quarter and year-to-date. And before we jump into it, I wanted to make you aware, as you all are definitely aware, the storm event we just had with Hurricane Dorian. We're going to share with you in October some of the costs associated with that. We're still compiling those numbers. As you can imagine, it takes a little bit of time, particularly with mutual aid invoices to come to us. And so once we get those accumulated, we're going to share those with you. But we will be coming back in October to share sort of an overview of how the storms impact us fiscally and the preparations we make to address that in a fiscal sense and what we may need to think about moving forward if we continue to see these types of activities within our weather. And so we're going to bring that to you in October, but we'll address that when we bring it to you. But I just wanted to make you aware we are looking at those numbers. We're sensitive to that. And before we jumped into financials, I just wanted to make you aware of that particular item. So Moving ahead, good news to report in terms of megawatt hour sales. As you can see there, that we are about 2% over our budget for megawatt hour sales for the year, and we are about 5% over the previous year in terms of megawatt hour sales. Interestingly enough, and I think we've shared this with you before, the sensitivity of our sales is directly correlated to weather. And so to the extent that we have seasonally warm or seasonally cold weather, that does affect sales. And we, for the months of May and June, and there's a bit of a lag in the billing and the time that it shows up in revenue, generally about a half a month or so, we exceeded our heating degree and cooling days by the 3-year, 5-year, and 10-year average for those 2 months. And so just something to note that we had some extreme months. We had some temperate months in the early years, so they kind of offset each other. That's why there's only a 2% increase overall over or overage over budgeted. But that's something to note, and you can see that, you know, the weather does directly impact our sales, and that's sort of the takeaway to that comment. So moving ahead into sort of the overview of our financial strength maintenance, we were able to accomplish the board's directive of achieving a positive net income year-to-date of $21.7 million. And we did also do that in accordance with meeting all of the criteria that the board has set for us there on the left with respect to all the objectives and metrics that you've asked us to meet. So good news on that front. Moving into the improving customer service by staying in the bottom one-third for our residential 1,000 kWh rate, you can see that we were able to achieve that as well. So at 21.6, most definitely meets our bottom one-third requirement. And we were able to do that while attaining the positive net income and meeting objectives. So good news on that front as well. So now we move into more specific information with respect to the individual line items of revenue and expense. You can see our metered sales revenue, we had budgeted to be about 163, but as I shared with you just a moment ago, we are slightly ahead of year-to-date sales compared to budget of about $167 million. And that's a positive variance of about $4 million, or 2.5%, as I shared with you earlier. One piece of good information, too, I think you saw this last quarter, too, our bad debt, we budgeted to write off, so to speak, $258,000. We've actually, to the positive, collected $26,000 more than we had written off, so we have a positive variance of $284,000. And that's Susan folks doing such a great job of going out, being really proactive and assertive in collecting those debts on behalf of KUA customers, and so that is a nice offset to be able to show. It doesn't happen in most places that I've seen. That's a very uncommon but very welcome thing.
That's because we have a good team.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. Absolutely. Our cost of power adjustment, we are very close to what we anticipated being budgeted at for this time year to date. We budgeted 32.8, and we've actually expended 33.6 through the COPA mechanism to bring our customers' bills into the bottom one-third metric. And so we're only a very small variance, relatively speaking, of that amount of $815,000. Rate stabilization fund transfer, you'll note we had budgeted to utilize about 15.4 of that to either capital or the COPA mechanism. We've only used 4.2. And so basically what that tells us with that $11.2 million, because we're on target for COPA and we have expended what we anticipated to use for that purpose, we really were, the other part of that is capital projects. We're a little behind on some of those capital projects getting done at this point in the year. That will probably self-correct, but to the extent that it doesn't, we can move those forward into the next fiscal year. But that 11.2 is most exclusively related to capital projects. So otherwise, we're on track for budget, and we'll probably be catching those up as the work continues. So that gives us total operating revenue. We budgeted to be about 158. We came in at 151, and again, the biggest part of that is the non-utilization of rate stabilization lowers revenues, and so we have a $7.5 million negative variance, but it's only negative because we haven't used as much rate stabilization as we anticipated. You'd asked us to show you this from every quarter. This is the $20.6 million is what we anticipated to use of rate stabilization for the original budget. Year to date, we thought we were going to use 15.4. I showed you that on the previous slide. And we've only used 4.2 of that in total. About $1.5 million of that was for the bottom one-third. In addition to the FMPA-held rate stabilization, we used about $700,000 of that. And the rest of that would have been going to capital. So we have utilized what we anticipated in terms of the bottom one-third. And again, we'll be caught up on our capital, we hope, soon. If not, then we'll carry that into next year. For demand charges, we anticipated about $50 million. We are under that by about $2.6 million. That's a semi-fixed portion of what we have through the ARP. Energy charges, this is the variable piece, and it does vary based on sales, which you know were a bit of ahead. So we had anticipated about $29.7 million. We were over that by about 32.2 or 2.4 million. And again, that's the variable piece directly related to sales. And so we track that pretty close to what we sold in megawatt hours. Our bulk system rate stabilization, year to date, we used about a million of that to stay in the bottom one third. And so we don't budget that number, but that's a usage year to date that we show you for the million there. Total fuel and purchase power, $86 million is where we thought we'd be for the total costs, and we're at $85 million, so we're pretty close at $658,000 variance there. Operating revenue, which is the previous page's revenue minus these total fuel and purchase power expenses, we anticipated that net piece to be $72.5 million. We're at $65.6 million, and that's, again, related largely to the fact that we haven't used as much rate stabilization as quickly as we thought we would into the revenue stream. Departmentally, you can see we have a couple of small variances. The E&O is a little bit behind budget by $1.1 million. Labor related to the capital projects that hasn't been capitalized yet, but that work will probably catch up through the end of the year. Finance and accounting, we have a couple of regulatory fees and service fees that we are not utilizing as quickly as we thought. Part of that is related to the AMSCOT fees as more customers migrate to online payment. We don't utilize that service as much, and so there's less of a cost associated with that. So there's a bit of a savings on that. In the general manager's office, those variance there is related to the previous general manager's transition departure costs. And then human resources, those are primarily the small variance there is related to some professional services, attorney's fees that haven't been utilized, which is always a good thing, and also some of the tuition reimbursement portion that they've budgeted hasn't been used as quickly as we'd anticipated that for the fiscal year. Overhead credits is a variance. When we do capital work, we will sometimes capitalize that work out of O&M and into capital. And so what that shows you is, that, again, it sort of reiterates the point we're a little behind on capital projects, capitalization. So we've got a variance there of the $797,000. Again, not a major number, but relatively speaking, we anticipate that correcting through the end of the year. Net operating revenue then, we had anticipated to be at budget of $45 million. We actually coming in at $39 million for a variance of $5.4 million. And then other operating expenses, I won't go through these details. I rarely do because these all come in very close to budget on a net basis, so we don't spend a lot of time on this page. But the change in net position, which is our term for net income, we budgeted to be at $26.5 million or thereabouts, and we actually are at $21.7 million net income for a $4.7 million variance. The investment portfolio, as you can see here, we do continue to keep the majority of our funds invested at the Business Administration at $66.6 million. And we do continue to keep that at a shorter term because of our liquidity needs. You can see we got a bit of a bump in March. We did take some long-term investments. There was a little bit of a bump in the short end of the yield curve, and so we sold some longer-term investments and put them into the shorter term, and we got a little bit of a bump in March. So our annualized yield is about 2.31%, which is a bit of an increase and moving in the right direction against the SBA's rate. So we are pleased to have that for good news as well. And that is my last slide, Madam Chair, in the interest of brevity and condensed financial reporting. And I am happy to answer any questions.
Well done. Are there any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Now,
Madam Chair, we've got Jeff Gray, who's going to give his quarterly, semi-annual report. Sorry, not quarterly, semi-annual report on IT.
Changing it up on me. Hello, Board.
All right, let's jump right in. Some successes, some highlights for you, and also some things that are coming. Online services, obviously this has been such a great win-win for both the utility and the customer. It started with e-bill, and then we were able to do more with e-bill, such as the things you see there, payment extensions, reporting an outage, texting, chatting live with a rep. It just keeps growing. And we are at 49.4% as of this morning in terms of our e-bill subscription rates. Fantastic number, very much ahead of where most people are. And in terms of numbers, I have the count there, the 39,000. But if we were printing, with the cost of a postage stamp, if we were printing that bill, mailing it in the mail, and the time, the fuel, everything else, it's about a dollar a bill. So every e-bill subscriber we use that goes paperless, that's a dollar saved every month, and that adds up very quickly when you look at that over a year. Automated metering, of course, that's quite the buzz. The biggest project we have going right now is all of the AMI in all of the departments. Everybody is working really hard to get that going. That's the count so far of the meters that are actually deployed and running right now, 5,000 plus, and an average of about 250 a day. We are learning all of the new things that were never problems before, because when you install a meter and come back and see you in a month, it's easy. But now when you're talking to it, in bursts of every 15 minutes, it's a little different. So that's those are the growing pains, but it's there are challenges that can be solved. The mass deployment, like I said, is underway, and all of the integrations that are needed, whether it be at the front end, what's called the head end, where all the reads arrive to be handled, or the meter data management system, which is where they go to be sort of processed and cleaned up and verified. All of these things have outputs that go into business units throughout the company, not just customer service, but dispatch and engineering and so forth. Everybody has a piece of the pie, so to speak. And that data then gives us all kinds of new tools to identify problems and also plan ahead, which is great. Some of the things that are also that the AMI project has pushed us to do is I'm going to talk in just a second about ServiceLink, but is also to give the customer a sense of, I've got this new fancy meter, so what, right? That's great for KUA, but what about me? Well, that's the user portal, and that's a very exciting thing. I am hoping to be back in front of you next month and show you how it works, because we're building it now, and we're hoping that everything will fall into place the way we need it to, because there's certain flows of interfaces that have to be working correctly before a customer sees it. But version one will allow the consumers to see their consumption data, those 15-minute reads. They can actually see the little flows, and they compare that with the temperature in the day and see how those things correlate. If you're not an AMI meter customer yet, you'll still have access to the portal. You'll just see your last bill and any other features that are available at the time. Version 2, which will come shortly after, will integrate a lot of the things that e-bill and the app do. They'll all be in the portal as well. So reporting an outage, seeing your bill, paying your bill, and a ton of other features that I don't want to do any spoilers on. I'll talk about that next time, but that's all part of version 2 of the portal. So that's, and again, timely, coming right along. Meanwhile, we got these meters. Now, if you think about one meter being changed out from the old meter to the new meter, you have to test it, drive out to the customer's house, let them know what you're doing because you're about to cut their power for a few seconds while you switch everything over. You're going to install that new meter. That meter has to be, we have to record all kinds of data, the serial number, what was the old read, we have to put that in the system. The meter has to then detect in the RF mesh network and start communicating back to our network so we can do the reads. We have to take the old meter back. We test it as well. It's all these things are happening both on the system in terms of tracking it, and in the field where the operational work is taking place. Now, do that 250 times a day, and you can see how quickly this can get away from us. So we knew that with that, we needed a meter swap management approach. A lot of utilities who go through AMI deployments, just like us, will buy this kind of software. It's pricey. And they'll do their deployment, and then they just kind of throw it away because it only had it was a one-trick pony kind of software. It just did swaps. We didn't want to do that. We wanted to take that money and invest it in something that was more long-term, and also would work with our existing systems. We have mobile forces in the field already, as you know. They've got their iPads. They're out there doing different things. But we now have this sort of two worlds, if you will, where I've got some customers on an AMI meter and some customers on the traditional meter, and we have daily service requirements to get out to some of the meters, read them, turn them on, turn them off, install them, and so forth. How do you do all that? Well, the system that we're building, which is called ServiceLink, hopefully coming in the next few weeks, but it may take a little longer to make sure it's absolutely right. It will allow us to take what we're doing in the field with mobile, the new world of AMI, and also all of the traditional things, and merge that together. So now what we'll be able to give to the technician in the field is GPS maps right to the house. So he's taking the most efficient route there when he's going to do some type of service. They'll also be able to see all of the work around them that is due that day. Before, if they had a great knowledge of the streets, which a lot of our meter readers did, you could say an address and they could point to it on a map. But if you're not totally sure that this street is near you, it was harder for you to catch that, hey, I could just go around the corner and get that one job knocked out while I'm here. With this system, they'll be able to do that. they can trade jobs off and get something taken care of. So our efficiency will go up. Customer turnaround times will be faster. And, of course, most importantly, it's all live data. So the moment it's done in the field, the system has it. If that customer calls in right away, we can see everything that's going on the property. Fantastic. So that's Service Link, and that, again, is coming very soon. Just another screenshot of what it looks like for the field reps when they're out in the field. Also, one of the nice features is that the dispatchers, not our electrical dispatchers, but the ones down in customer service who are handling all of these operations, can see everything as well. So they have a great view of what's going on in the field that before relied on phone calls and that kind of thing. So we've really, really given them a great set of tools once it's all up and running. And with all that blue skies and technology and everything else, we unfortunately turn to the darker side of IT, which is the cybersecurity and all these things you're seeing in the headlines. Florida has gotten really beaten up, but it's not just Florida, right? It's everywhere. Governments typically pay, according to the research, 10 times what an average company would pay for ransomware, and the hackers know this, and so they target governments. And the insurance, of course, helps because you've got some padding there, but the FBI still tells everybody, please do not pay because you're only perpetuating the problem, but people pay when they get in too deep. So with that, let's take a look at what's going on with KOA. Director Hemphill asked if I would share some data about what we're blocking, and I was going to leave that out because it's we have to look in a lot of places to dig it up. But we got that, and I thought I'd go ahead and share it with you. So the Internet, of course, is a very dangerous place, and we're sitting there with our systems that can communicate with the web in a safe way through a firewall. But this is monthly what we see. About 10,000 times a month, we get our port scan. That by itself isn't so scary. It's just someone seeing if anything's available to exploit. But 10,000 times a month is still 10,000 attempts. And then from that, about 1,100 times a month, they try to actually break in. They start trying to see if they've got an exploit that can get through our firewalls. And then about 70 times a month, they actually think they've got something and they start banging away. No, they don't get through. We have tons of features and systems in place to protect us from this. But this is just another month at KUA. This is nothing to be alarmed about. It's like this is just what it is to do business on the Internet today and be a utility and a government. So what are we doing to protect the customer? Because we keep seeing this sort of morph of a risk, right? What I had told you 6 months or a year ago about the risks in cybersecurity have gotten bigger since then, and they're more complicated. And as the risks change, our profile and our posture in dealing with them has to change. So we're adding even more layers of security internally and externally. I consider it above and below what we already have. So in terms of prevention, there's things we can be doing like training users. They get a monthly newsletter that helps them learn. You see these, they're from Lucy, if you've seen the name of the software. It helps you learn how to spot a bad email and so forth. User training is one of the best practices that are recommended in the industry to make sure everybody knows that cybersecurity is their business as much as ours. Because it just takes that one click, right, to launch $1 million. That's $1 million click when ransomware gets launched. So the more users are prepared, the less likely it could happen. Of course, keeping your systems patched and updated and all those upgrades that sometimes break things that everybody pulls their hair out about, we have to do those things to prevent something much worse from happening, like a breach or an exposure. We're also doing a lot more intervention where we're going to start limiting the use of things like USB drives because those can bypass tons of external systems, walk into the building, plug it into a computer, and now you're ready to go. You've got something you could launch as a payload. Maybe not a hacker. It could be an internal employee who's just upset and wants to do something. So we have to limit that as well. Convenience starts to shrink, and what was quick and easy before is not so easy anymore. There was a time when we didn't put passwords in computers, right? We didn't need them. Now we do. And so we're going to see that change. And so as much as everybody hates when I start moving things inside and outside the firewall and now you can't get in or you got to get on the VPN, these are just necessary changes that our posture has to match the risk. Let's talk a little bit about threat detection because that is something that is very important and it helps you kind of get a sense of what we're doing to prepare for future risks. Out there on the Internet, there's all kinds of data that is connecting to KUA. It could be emails. It could be different files, various services that are communicating all the time. It's not just a one-time thing. It's in and out. And if anything that comes in or out of our firewall has got something in it that's dangerous, it can quickly spread inside the network because we have a very efficient network. Well, that's great, but it's also a huge risk because you've got this ability to transport ransomware or viruses quickly. And those potential threat vectors that you see on the screen, That's the thing we're trying to avoid. Most of it comes in the form of email. Sometimes it's a file, sometimes it's something else. But email is our number one risk. All those ransomware headlines you've seen, Baltimore, City of Atlanta, Riverside Beach, I can go on and on. Emails. Somebody clicks something and off it went. So what are we doing about emails? You may remember this graphic from last year when I gave you a cybersecurity update about how much email is coming to us at any given time. In a year, about 2.1 million emails are sent to KUA. 1.68 million are identified immediately as having some kind of threat. There's a virus, there's something in it that makes it look suspicious, maybe spam, and we just immediately turn that away. After that step, that email that made it through the first step has to keep making it through more and more steps before the user gets to see it. So there's a scan that takes place, and then if we see something at the next level, there's a quarantine where we're like, aha, it looks like there's something else in this. So we quarantine it, you can't get to it, and we have to take action. About 180 of those a year happen where we have something get on a computer. It could be email. It could be somebody click something on a website. And it can happen in different ways. About 180 of those a year get detected, and we immediately remove them. The user approves those emails that are in that list. You've seen that Barracuda list that we go digging through all the time to see who mailed us something, and then it is delivered into their mailbox. At this point, only 16% of the mail that originally started out headed to KUA has been filtered through, which is good, but it's not perfect. So now we have the user down there, excuse me, and they're ready. They're going to open up this email, but what if there was something that was what they call a zero-day virus? In other words, there is no signature, nobody knows how to block it or how to identify it yet, and it's out there on the internet, and those things happen all the time. That's your biggest threat because there was not a chance for the filters to catch it. So with that, we realize that all of the work that I've just described is being done after the mail has come through. We're actually processing it after it's sort of inside the wall. So we don't want that. We want a lot more processing to be done before it ever makes it to KUA. So how would we do that? Well, we've got a new service that's being turned up right now that would allow us to take a sort of a three-step approach to email before it ever comes to KUA. And this advanced threat detection works like this. Email's coming, and of course, if it's obvious that it's spam or some kind of virus, we're going to immediately pull that out. It won't even make it to KUA's firewall. But at some point, it's going to come across one that's questionable but not verifiably known that, yeah, that one might have a virus, it might not. So they go to, like, level two. And this email is then examined a little more closely, where they match signatures of known viruses, known ransomware, and see if it matches that. If it does, we know to pull it. If it doesn't, but it still doesn't quite look right, it's going to send it to what they call level three. Now, level three is a much more secure environment. It's literally a virtual computer where it's like a room that you can take this email, open up the attachment, and see what happens. If it's a virus, then we've got it trapped inside a virtual environment. Again, outside KUA, not even inside our borders. We're not doing this here. It then says, okay, that was a virus. I'm going to create a little number that I assigned to that to say this is the signature of that virus. Any other email for anybody in the world who sees that, they're going to know that that was a ransomware virus that's never going to make it to their system. We get an email letting us know somebody, and a lot of times, believe it or not, someone you know, sent you this, and it had ransomware in it, so we didn't deliver it. So you know you didn't get it, but we also can call back and go, hey, did you know you were sending me a virus? And then they usually don't know, believe it or not, and we can help them out as well. And all that happens above the firewall. So let's say an email made it through all that strain and filtering, and we're now back at KUA, and here comes that email, and it's been cleared by the advanced threat protection. We're still going to force it to go through every single one of our existing steps. We don't give up anything. We're going to run it all the way through, and if it still makes it all the way, and it was some really clever hacker, because it's just never enough, right? And they absolutely got through all of it and tricked everyone, and we click it, and it had a virus in it. It's okay. We can now lock that. This is the service that's already enabled in KUA. We can lock that file and lock the email in such a way where the user can't click the links. They just go blank like you can't enact them. Can't open up the attachment, and it moves it to a special place where now it's sort of, you know, in a quarantine of its own. With that, of course, virus protection, all the other stuff internal to us, the endpoint protection, kicks in. And if there is a virus in it, it alerts IT, and we jump on that like white on rice. So that, in essence, I may have jumped ahead a little too quick. That, in essence, is operating our company in a 1% safe zone out of the 100% risk that's out there. And I know it sounds like I'm being tongue-in-cheek, but if you want 100% safe zone, unplug your computer and go back to paper. There is no way to have 100%, especially when it could be somebody working inside the company who tries to do this. But I'll take 1% over that other 99 any day. So that's everything we're doing right now to protect both files, internal procedures against anybody doing something malicious, and also trying to get ahead on what might be coming tomorrow, because the, you know, I get probably 2 to 3 emails a day of the latest risk, the latest exploit, and it's never ending. But we are staying on top of it. On a slightly lighter note, we're going to be upgrading this room. You're going to see new monitors. These are incredibly past their life expectancy, which has been great, but they're going to be upgraded. We're going to be doing that before the next board meeting, so you'll see them on your next visit here. We're also going to be improving the sound system. There's some balancing that's off between the volumes here and the volumes here. While they're doing the screens, we're going to be doing that as well, and some new LED lighting, which will help us improve the overall look of the room. That's all happening in the next month. So I think all of it will be done before your next visit, except for maybe the LED lighting. It might take a little longer. And with that, I'll leave you with a nice future view of Neo City and take any questions.
With the removal of the old equipment, what's going to happen with that?
Anything that we don't repurpose, as far as you're talking about the monitors,
mm-hmm.
Anything that we don't repurpose goes to auction. Any other questions?
Any other questions?
Good
Thank
job.
You, Jeff.
Very good. Thank you.
Actually, it's fascinating. It just blows your mind that what's going on. Okay, we go to hear our attorney.
Good evening, Madam Chair, board members. Hope you all are doing well. Just a couple items for you. We've discussed both in Washington and periodically throughout the year the Federal Communications Commission's order basically repealing municipal exemption from regulation of pole attachments. Under the law, arguably the FCC doesn't have the right or ability to tell us what to charge telecommunications companies, broadband companies, what to charge or how soon we must rule on their applications. But the FCC has determined that it does have that authority. Well, we've had an interesting development in the case. It's on appeal. It's in the Ninth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals. APPA has filed this appeal. And the FCC filed a brief, and in that brief, they said the following. The Commission has nowhere sought to extend its statutory interpretations in the small cell order to property within public rights of way, except when the property in question is controlled by the same government entity that controls the right of way. In plain English, if you're a separate utility authority like we are arguably, according to the Commission itself, not subject to its jurisdiction for this order. APPA is in a reply brief said, please clarify that, and court, please rule that, you know, those APPA members that are not the actual municipality itself, like KUA, are not covered by the order. This doesn't help the city of Kissimmee, which we still have that issue for the city and other local governments throughout the country. But it could be a promising development for us, and it could help us as we have attachers, small cell wireless attachers in particular, come to us and seek new agreements. So I just want to let you know that was an interesting development, potentially very promising. And then the other thing on a good news front, oral arguments were held at the state Supreme Court on the deregulation amendment that's being worked on by folks that want to completely deregulate every facet of the electric industry in this state. Which would be very much against our ratepayers' interests and the interests of Floridians in general. The consensus for those who were there and saw the oral arguments is that they went very well for our side against the amendment. The amendment is confusing. It's only supposed to touch on one subject. It touches on multiple subjects. And it doesn't really give the voter a clear indication that what the amendment's asking for is to put incumbent utilities out of business. So hopefully the state Supreme Court will agree with the arguments that were made, and that would be a great victory for us on that.
Was this something that's going to be put on the ballot?
That's being attempted. There's still 300.
Well, my understanding that on this type of referendum, only one subject can be put on the ballot.
That's correct.
That is correct, but you know it's in the eyes of the beholder whether you meet that single subject requirement. But I think the arguments made against this were very compelling and well presented. So hopefully that's what we'll see from the state Supreme Court. All eyes are on that. They still have almost 400 1,000 signatures to go. So even if the court ruled in the proponent's favor, they still have a lot of work to do. But it would be better if the court went ahead and agreed that the ballot amendment, proposed ballot amendment, is confusing and doesn't cover just one subject. Right. And that's all I have, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Grant.
Anybody else has a comment for Grant? Brian, do you have something for us?
Madam Chair, here are your reminders. I will just point out that the next board meeting, October 2nd at 2 p.m., this isn't the correct one, we will be holding a workshop for the board. We have asked FMPA General Counsel Jolie Finkley to come and provide us all with a refresher's course on Robert's Rules of Order. We will, if ready, staff has been working on a board orientation package that a number of you have provided input on, and we appreciate that. There's a few things that we're looking at. If that is complete, we'll provide a review of that. And then finally, if there's any time left, it provides the board with an opportunity to have a discussion about the CEO evaluation if you guys elect to do that. And then outside of that, Madam Chair, I just want to say thanks to staff for the preparation that they did for Hurricane Dorian. They did an amazing job. Communications, both internal and external, were wonderful, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
You said that was at 2 o'clock?
2 p.m.
I have Alicia, my secretary, put that on my calendar.
Okay. Mayor, do you have something for the...
No, great news is we finally... the trial is finally over. The individual that killed our officer was found guilty on both charges. And so now we're just waiting for the sentence, which is coming up, I think, in October. But it's finally over. This trial, it took forever, and now when the trial was going, it kind of opened that wound all over again in our KPD, and now they're able to rest a little bit better that this is going to be put behind them and we can move forward.
Good news. Director Hampel?
I just wanted to say thank you to all the staff and management that went through the Hurricane Dorian longevity before it got here, and then it passed us. So we really did dodge a bullet. But I know a lot of preparation and time was spent because Dorian couldn't make up her mind where she wanted to go. But we really did luck out. Thanks to everybody.
Director Thacker? She's not with us.
I am with you. I can hear you. I just can't see you.
Well, you are writing all over your face. So would you like to address us?
No. I'll see you next month.
Okay. Director Havina?
No comments. Just thank you to everybody. Some a little outside us. Wanted to congratulate the mayor in his dancing abilities. I saw pictures of the last activity.
Havana good time.
Havana times.
I hope that there is no pictures. The pictures cannot be posted. And
Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah.
Margo and Lucy, you have their nice
enjoy it because you'll never see it again.
So thank you for that.
Great event.
Thank you.
Just echo Brian's and thank you to the staff for what they did for the preparation for the hurricane. Thank you.
Right, and this, KUA had a presence on Facebook that was continuing. There was so much information that was out there, and I appreciate that too. Chris, I'm sure that was your department, and thank you for that. Other than that, just keep... Today in your thoughts, what a terrible memory, but God bless America. Meeting's adjourned.
Thank you. Havana.